This is Mondays Off, and we've got Steve, the fastest player on the East Coast, Westfall. Steve, is going on?
How are you, Newton?
I'm doing all right, man. Lovely, lovely morning here. So ice cold. I think my truck's at 10 degrees this morning. So, really, really loving it out here. Can't wait for winter to end.
10 degrees is brutal. We've had a stretch lately where I've had to actually go out and use the ice scraper to clear off my windshield in the morning on my way to work.
Yeah. And for you, like, I mean, you're not like, I think a lot of people think like you're stupid South, like, you know, you're like almost in like Florida, and you're not, like, you're kind of like middle of the country, right?
Yeah. I mean, I live in Delaware. I work just across the border into Maryland.
Yeah.
So for all intents and purposes, the climate is, I would say it's, I think we're south of the Mason-Dixon line, but our climate is basically a northern climate. I mean, it gets cold. The golf course is right on the water. It's chilly. That's for sure. It's not like I'm down in South Carolina or Florida or something like that, where it's, you know, you might get into the 50s if it's chilly. Like we have some 30, we have some 20 degree weather. It's no fun. Winter's no fun. And if it's going to be cold, it might as well snow. That's my philosophy. I like snow, I guess, but I don't want it to be 20 degrees and doing nothing. If it's going to be 20, there might as well be snow on the ground.
Yeah. I mean, I get that. My wife's a little bit the same way. She's like, yeah, if it's going to be winter, then be winter and like give us the snow and all that. But I mean, I hate shoveling snow. So, I mean, that's why, I mean, I'd rather just have it 20 degrees and I don't have to shovel anything. Yeah. I'm okay with that.
But absolutely. But we have kind of a long driveway. But it's not bad to shovel. And I'm one of those guys, I don't know how everyone else is, but I'm one of those guys that likes to do multiple, or if it's needed, I will do multiple shovels. But oh, I will not wait until like 1 p.m. after all the snow has fallen and then go out and shovel a foot of snow. I'll go out at 8. I'll shovel that 8 o'clock snow, hoping that the driveway is a little wet and the snow doesn't stick. And then if I have to go back out again and shovel again, I will. But shoveling 2 or 3 inches is way easier than shoveling a foot of snow.
Yeah. No, I agree. I'm the same way. I'll run out there and, you know, even if it's like, you know, after work, whatever, I'll do 2 or 3, runs at it instead of just breaking my back to shovel all, you know, 6, 8, whatever inches it is out there. So I'm in the same boat.
Yeah. But you said the fastest player. I mean, what to you? I do think I'm a pretty quick player when it comes to golf. But what to you would be, I guess, quick versus slow? Like, how long can I stand over a shot before you're like, wow, this guy needs to speed it up a little bit?
It's interesting. I don't know if I've necessarily like counted it down, but there definitely is. There's a number. We've all played with that guy that seems like he's standing over the ball for like 20 minutes and you're like, is he going to fall over? Is he going to swing? What is he doing? Like, is he counting? You know, it's got to be quick, couple seconds to stand over the ball, kind of get your mind right and then swing. If you're one of these guys, I think who's sitting there and standing over the ball for 10 seconds or whatever, you know, I don't know what you're doing. I mean, I guess it's part of your pre-shot routine. To me, you're just, I don't know. You're not doing anything that's helping, I don't think.
No, I mean, and if you're playing with that person, you're standing there and you're just like, okay, pull the trigger, pull the trigger,
yeah,
pull the trigger. And that's tough. That's tough to play with. I don't think on the tour level, if you look at this past weekend with JB Holmes and Justin Thomas, I don't think on the tour level it should make as big of a difference. But certainly when you're playing with someone, you get paired with someone and they're extremely slow, I feel like it's a little bit of a double standard. And people might not like this per se, but okay, if you're chasing the course record or you're chasing the best round of your career, you know, you're careering it out there and you want to look at a putt for a little bit longer, or we're playing in a tournament and there's money involved and you want to look at a putt for a little bit longer or debate whether you want to hit sand wedge or pitching wedge, I get that, you know, but if it's all 18 holes and we're just out there playing for fun, like step up, figure out what club you want to hit, you know, maybe a practice swing or two and then pull the trigger. Anything more than that is slow play in my opinion.
Yep. Yeah, no, I agree. And I think people do take, you know, and I get it. Everybody's a little different on how they play golf, but you know, it's, you know, when you stand there and you try to, you know, sit there and select these different clubs and, oh, what's the wind doing? And, oh, are the gusts happening or whatever? Like most of us, man, we're not good enough to take that in, to have it really affect our shot enough. You know, like guys on tour, like, you know, you mentioned these guys are playing for millions of dollars. They're playing for their livelihood. You know, we're out there just having fun, and to sit there and try to debate whether the gusts are going to stop your 6-iron short, you know, short, or do you need to go 5, whatever, like, just take the 5, swing easy, and just, you know, I mean, come on, you know, we're out there just having a good time. Nobody wants to play the 6-hour round.
No, that's the worst thing ever. I mean, paying money to play golf and then going out and playing a 6-hour round. Ugh. And I think even worse than that is if you ever, whether you're playing with a good player or a mediocre player, if you ever find someone that's like in between clubs and they're standing over it and they're like, oh, I'm just waiting for the gust to die down. Come on, man. Yeah. You know, that's brutal.
Yeah. It's not going to matter. I mean, in the long run, like, yeah, say the gust comes up and hits it. Like you have zero control over that, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's, and I don't think that that's the reason, like I said, on tour, they should be better at dealing with that. I don't think that's the reason that Justin Thomas kind of came back to the field on Sunday. Now I have to preface with the fact that I didn't watch much of the final round because I was at work. I was checking updates. But I certainly thought when the final round started that Justin Thomas would either win running away from the field or would at least have a 2 or 3 shot cushion. So I don't think it was slow play, but it's still, when you're not playing well and your playing partner is playing very slowly, that'll get under your skin a little bit for sure.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And I didn't see JB Holmes. I didn't know how slow he was playing. And, you know, then you get to the point where it's like, how slow do they have to be playing to penalize them? I feel like penalizing a golfer for slow play is almost like an NFL referee calling pass interference. Like you could almost call it on every play, but you know, at what point are you going to actually penalize the player for playing slow?
Yeah. And I mean, I know the internet was just destroying JB Holmes. I mean, any post out there on Twitter or Instagram or Facebook, or whatever, was just, you know, was just followed by like, oh, he's still not, he's done. Oh, he's not out there still. Oh, I thought he's still putting on 15. Like he, you know, and again, I was kind of flipping around. I was watching it. And I didn't, I mean, he's definitely not the fastest guy. He's never been. I didn't think he was doing anything outrageous. You know, in terms of, you know, reading putts or anything like that, but he's never been, you know, one of the faster players out there. So it didn't necessarily jump out at me like, oh my God, these guys are, you know, he's playing so slow, but you know, they didn't finish that quickly. That's for sure.
Yeah. And it's, I feel like Justin Thomas is a little bit quicker of a player. So when you have those two, you know, far ends of the spectrum where you have a quick player and then you have a slow player, that's where it's difficult. You know, I think I saw a quote recently from Koepka, where he said something like, and I don't know if this is legit or if it was fabricated. I can't remember the media outlet that I saw it on, but it was like, he would go to the bathroom for like 5 minutes, take his time. And then when he came back out, maybe they'd be put on the clock. And then now we're playing at his pace, I think is what he said.
Oh, you're
yeah. Which is, you know, some guys like to just walk up to the golf ball and hit it. And other guys, you know, Bryson DeChambeau, who I'm not saying Bryson's a slow player by any means, but you get guys that, okay, what's the club? It's a 9. It's a, we want to hit a cut off the TV tower. And then you get other guys that are talking about, you know, angle of descent of the golf ball, how it's going to jump out of the rough, what kind of altitude they're at. And it's, some people just analyze it more than others.
Yep. No, you're 100% right. I mean, there's guys who it seems like the cat, you know, the interaction between caddy and them is like, what yardage you got? Oh, 156. I've got 156 too. Think the wind's hurting? Yeah. -3. Okay, great. Go.
You know, yeah. I mean, it's 153 cover, you know, it's going to release 2 yards. Let's hit that shot.
Yeah. And it's just right? like, it happens so instantly. And then there's guys like, and again, I'm agreeing with you. I'm not claiming Bryson's a slow player, but the amount of back and forth between, is it a 6? Is it a 7? Is it that? What's the, you know, what's the barometric pressure today? Yeah. What's the, you know, is the moon aligned with Saturn? I mean, it's so many wild things that some of these guys talk to. You're just like, man, like, and to me as like an amateur 8 handicap, like that stuff is just stuff that gets in the way. Like, honestly, like I walk up to the ball. I kind of try to judge the wind a little bit as I'm walking down the fairway or going down the fairway. You know, I get to my ball. If it's something out a little bit, I shoot it with a laser. I go, wind's into me a little bit. Maybe I'll take some extra club. Wind's with me. You know, maybe I'll either choke down or grab the next club down. Go. Like, there's no, you know, oh, am I going to try to hit a cut and start it here and lend it there? Whatever. Like, my decision process is like, you know, 10 seconds. You know, it's not. Yeah. Maybe I'll throw a little grass up in the air. That may be the longest I do anything, you know. Mm-hmm. But usually I'm doing that stuff while my partner's over there, you know, hitting his shot.
Right.
You know,
well, that's, if you really wanted to talk about pace of play, that is ideal, where, you know, you go to your golf ball, they go to their golf ball, and while they're hitting, you're going through that process, whatever your process may be, whether it's throwing some grass up, checking the wind, you know, figuring out if there's a slope on the green, that you need to funnel the golf ball into, you know, what altitude you're at, which you should probably already know that, you know, whether you're at sea level, above sea level, below sea level. And this is, even what I'm saying right now is probably more advanced than, you know, unless you're playing in a tour event, these probably aren't things that you factor in.
No.
But that's proper pace of play. When your playing partner is hitting or trying to hit their shot, you are going through your process. So as soon as they pull the trigger, you are then ready just about to hit your shot. But you see guys all the time, especially, you know, your weekend warriors, so to speak, where someone will drive the cart over to their golf ball, right? Both players are in the cart. They'll wait for their playing partner to hit their shot. And then they will take the cart and drive over to their golf ball and go through their whole process.
Yep.
And that's when you're standing on the tee and you're watching these people, you know, army golf, as people like to call it, you know, the zigzag thing. And it's like, why are 3 players over at this one golf ball and the other 2 players have their golf balls on the left side of the fairway?
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing out there?
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, and like you said, I mean, or the guy, you know, drives over. I've seen it where the guy drops off his buddy, but the guy doesn't take any clubs or anything. The other person drives back, hits their ball, then they have to come back to give the guy a club. And it's just like, it's a whole disaster. Like, the amount of planning you need to, like, drop somebody off with a club or two, you know, their GPS or their laser rangefinder, drop them off, you know, they grab their 2 clubs they might need. You know, they're deciding on their shot. They hit it while you're driving over to your ball. I mean, it's not a hard thing to do. And I don't get why people don't do it. Is it like a pride thing? Are they like, well, I don't want to look like the guy who's, you know, carrying 2 clubs back across the fairway. Like, what does it matter?
I don't know what it is, but it's one of those things where, you know, you need to be ready to hit your shot. And like I said, I wouldn't say I'm the fastest player in the world, but I move pretty quick. Once I get to the golf ball, I know what I like as soon as I hit my tee shot. Right. So, and like this comes back to course management, but I like to play golf holes backwards, as it's a very common thing, you know, when you're talking about management. And I know if the hole is 345, I'm going to hit 3 wood off the tee because I don't need driver. I hit three wood anywhere between 225 to 245, depending on how I hit it. So I automatically know, okay, I'm going to have 100 to 120 in on this hole, depending on how much the golf ball is running out, how I struck the golf ball. And I know when I get up there, it's probably three wood gap wedge or three wood sand wedge. You know what I mean? And I already know that before I get to the golf ball. So once I get to the golf ball, it's like, okay, I have 117, not 112 or 110, but I already have that club in mind that I'm going to use.
Yep.
Maybe one or two club different, but you have that idea. So when you get there, you're ready to go. And never once have I got to a golf ball and been like, oh, I wasn't expecting this yardage. Let me go walk it off and try to gun it. And, you know, then you see guys that are 50 yards away from the green and they walk up and check the surface of the green to see where they want to land it. Like I said, if you're playing in a pro event, that's one thing, or a tour event. But when you're shooting 85, you don't need to walk up to the green from 50 yards out to see what the green's doing. No. You just don't.
It's kind of, to me, the same thing with some of the putting stuff as well. You know, I've seen guys who are, you know, 25 handicaps out there and they're walking around the, you know, a putt, and they've got to look at it from seven different angles. And, you know, I'm not tooting my own horn that I'm a great putter or a great green reader, but I'm like, I can pretty much walk up to a putt, look at it from kind of the side, see if it's, you know, uphill, downhill, look at it from behind, say, all right, the break's probably this. And then, like, go. I mean, like, I'm pick my line, I hit it. And like I said, I'm not the best, but I'm no Brad Faxon. But, like, I don't need to look at it from one side, look at it from the other side, look at it from the right, look at it from the left, look at it at a side angle, look at it, you know. Like, I don't need to do all those things. I don't need to walk across my line, like, my feet on, you know, the other side. I don't need to do all that stuff. And like I said, I'm not trying to say, like, oh, I'm the best putter in the world. But, you know, I just don't see where the advantage is for some of these putts, you know. And then the person, you know, hits it and it goes, you know, a foot right anyway. I mean, they just, you know, they open the face, but it's just, you know, I'm watching this stuff and it's like, and the reason these people do it is because they see it on tour and they go, oh wow, that guy's doing that. You know, he's such a good putter. He must be seeing something from all these different angles that helps him make it. So I'm going to do the same thing.
And oh yeah.
It doesn't necessarily translate, you know. I mean, like I said, I look at myself as 8 handicap. If I look at it from 7 different angles or I look at it from 2, I probably have the same percentage chance of making the putt.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yeah. But that's the same thing when you, like, typically I will not go out and marshal the golf course, but every once in a while I like to take a ride around the golf course, say hello to the members, make sure they're doing okay. But it's when I go out there for my position, it's less of a martial thing and more of, I guess, a public relations kind of thing, where I just want to make sure that I say hi to everyone when they're playing golf. And but you see the same thing out there with members where, you know, you might hit, some of our members might hit driver 250. Okay. And they will stand over their second shot into a par five from like 235 with a three wood in their hand, and they'll wait until the green is cleared and then top it 20 yards.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, are you actually going to hit the green? Why are we? And I get the etiquette behind it where you're waiting for the green to clear because God forbid you actually cure one and catch one well. Could you get to the green? Yeah. But what are the chances you do that?
Yeah.
And then you watch someone in the fairway, they take 15 swings, they wait until the green clears, and then they top it 20 yards. And it's like, well, now you just put your group behind pace of play because you were standing in the middle of the fairway forever.
Yeah, no. Yeah, exactly. You know, the thing of overestimating how far people hit clubs is a pretty bad epidemic. And again, like, I'm not out here trying to, like, pick on players, because I mean, it took me a long time to realize, like, man, you cannot hit it that far. Like, I was that probably young kid thinking, like, I know I'm 265 out, but three wood off the deck, well, if I catch it right and it catches the slope and da da da, I could get it on there. Like, no. Mm-hmm. Man, like, I know that's not gonna happen. I know you know, this is reasonably what I can expect to hit from each club. Like, I know that. So you don't find me waiting anymore, unless it is like it is a, you know, 225 from a par five and it's wide open and I could hit, you know, I'm going to go for it with my three wood. Okay, I'm going to let the green clear, but I know I can hit that yardage and I can do it on a fairly repetitive basis. You know, but yeah, if it's 260, have I hit a three wood 260 off the deck? I probably have with roll and wind and all that. I probably have once or twice in my life. Is it something that I expect that I'm going to wait for the green to clear? Hell no. There's no way. I know it's not getting there.
Yeah. I think too, if we're really going to delve into pace of play, one of the biggest issues that we run into at a private club is not letting other groups play through.
Oh, it's brutal.
You know, if you go out to a muni, and you have tee times for 5 hours straight, it's very difficult to let a group play through because, especially like on a par three, right? So we hit our tee shots on a par three. The group behind us has been up our butts for the last three holes, and we decide, okay, we're going to let them play through. But you have continuous play. So now our balls are all up around the green, hopefully on the green, but up around the green. And you decide you're going to let that group behind you play through. Now you need to start walking down the path or riding down the path, move to the side, wave them through, let them hit their shots. They finish their shots. And then now you're on the green and there's a group already on the tee again.
Yep.
So that, I think that's difficult, but in a private setting, you know, if we do 30 rounds in a day, that's the biggest issue that we run into, is because no one really cares how fast or slow you play if they're not in your group. Like if I have a foursome behind me that plays in 6 hours, I could really care less. Now, as an assistant pro, does it bother me? Absolutely. But if that group that plays in 6 hours lets three or four groups play through, no one cares.
Yeah.
The issue stems from when that group plays in 6 hours and they don't let anyone behind them play through.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And there's a big gap where, you know, you let a couple groups through and all of a sudden, you know, people start flying. And you're right. Cause I mean, I play a ton of munis. I mean, I'm not a member of a club, and it is there's, you know, like I said, I mean, you can look ahead and be like, man, these guys are slow. But then you look and you go, even if we, you know, they let us play through, it doesn't matter. You know, and the next
the pace
group
is so slow.
Yeah.
And that's even at a muni, though, that's tough because people are weird about that.
They are.
Like if I'm standing on the tee and I'm with a couple of my buddies and I know that we're playing slow and I have a single or a twosome behind us, I mean, I'm all about etiquette, so I will try to wave them up and say, yeah, just go through, you know, no big deal. And sometimes they do, but sometimes they don't. And I feel like the reason they don't is because they don't want to have to step up and hit a shot in front of other people.
Yeah, the rushed tee shot when you play through, it's never good. You know, I've done the same thing. Like I'm one of those people where it's the same thing. Like people will be like, because a lot of times, like, I'll play some Twilight and I'll run out and it'll just be me out there. And every once in a while, there may be a gap where like a threesome or foursome in front of me will see me come up and they'll wave me through, just knowing, you know, hey, there's a hole ahead of us or whatever. With Twilight, you just never know how the tee sheet looks. But yeah, every time I'm just like, I'm really appreciative that they're letting me play through because I know I'm going to just fly. But I just, man, that tee shot just, it's so awful. I mean, I don't even necessarily care that people are watching. It's more the fact that, like, if I hit a bad one, then these guys are going to have to wait, and I'm going to have to go, you know, find it in the, you know, long grass and then, you know, hack it out and all that. But it is. It's so hard to hit that shot, and you're always rushed. Even when guys are like, oh, no, take your time. You always rush.
Well, you know, they're saying that to be polite, but like you said, you get up on the tee, you got a group that lets you play through, and you know, you happen to snipe one into the fescue or something. It's like, well, now do I actually go find that and play the hole like I normally would? Or should I just throw a ball down and drop so I can get out of their way? It's kind of an uncomfortable thing.
Yep.
But pace of play is a huge issue. I mean, whether you're at a country club, whether it's on tour, And I mean, on tour, they're out there in the final round playing twosomes.
Yeah.
You know, it should never be that slow. And it's difficult to assess the pace of play issue out there, because where do you draw the line of when you penalize someone and when you don't? I feel like it's you might have checkpoints. I've been at places where they have checkpoints on the golf course where if you teed off at this time, like whole spreadsheets, where if you teed off at this time, you know, you have to be to the 10th hole at this time. Otherwise, you're behind pace. Some of the golf courses that have Visage, maybe not even Visage, but have a GPS unit that will actually monitor your pace of play and tell you whether you're ahead of pace or behind pace. But that's a huge issue. No one wants to go out and play a 5.5 hour round.
No,
that's miserable. I mean, you're waiting on every shot. You're not enjoying your golf experience. It's so tough to say, but I almost feel like people watching golf on TV is great for the game. I think you can learn a ton. But then you have, you know, 20 handicappers that are used to watching who's a more meticulous player. Like, again, I don't think he's a slow player, but Bryson DeChambeau, very meticulous about what he's doing with his shot. So you're sitting on your couch as a 20 handicap. You watch Bryson play in a tour event, and you're like, oh, wow, he factors in wind direction. He factors in, you know, what side of the green he wants to miss on, and both of those things are good. But then, like you said, he might factor in barometric pressure or angle of descent. And it's like, yeah, well, he's out there playing for millions of dollars. You know, he's not a 20 handicap who is going to miss the green right, left, short or long regardless. So it's a little different for him. But I think that hurts people a little bit. And then you mentioned the green reading thing. You know, people see that on TV and they're like, oh, I'm going to go look at my putt from 7 different angles. I mean, I don't even look at my putt from more than one angle. I feel like if I look at my putt from the other side of the hole, I will second guess my read.
Yeah.
I know tour players will look at all angles, but me personally, I know what works best for my game, and I'll get behind it. I'll squat down. I'll take a read. And then maybe I factor in if there's any outside influences. Is there a ridge somewhere? Is the low point of the green over here where it might kind of change how the ball moves? But that's about it. I don't look at it from 7 different angles.
Yeah.
And you get these guys that are playing a $5 Nassau that take 10 minutes to read their putt. And it's not good for the game of golf.
No. And here's the biggest one to me that in terms of controversial, because I know there's probably going to be a few different ideas on it. So, like, in my league, we play, like, you know, my 9-hole league. We go out, and you're playing against another guy, you know, with handicap, just stroke play. And you have the ability, if, you know, somebody putts it and it's, you know, a couple inches, whatever, you can just tell them to pick it up. You know, you don't make them putt it out, which is fine. I mean, a lot of guys, you know, if it's inside the leather typically or something like that, you know, and it doesn't really mean anything, you know, early in the round, whatever, like you'll tell the guy to pick it up. Like, I'll tell the guy to pick it up all the time. Like, I don't care. But the other thing too is making all four guys putt out every single putt and waiting, you know, like the league that plays in front of us is a bunch of older gentlemen. And I think they adhere to some of the rules much closer than others, but they won't give each other any putts, and they always let whoever's farther away putt. So if a guy putts and you can tell, like, he's probably tap in distance, that guy will mark that ball, you know, pick it up, step away, let the other guy come up, putt, either hole out or he'll miss, mark it, go back. And they'll do that until they hole out. But no one ever tells anybody, like, hey, man, it's good, pick it up, whatever. Like, even if I'm playing, like, you know, if I'm playing Steve for a couple bucks and you may have a nice lag putt and it comes within, you know, 8 inches, I'm going to be like, Steve, just pick it up, man. I don't care. Like, you know, the chances of you missing it are probably pretty slim, and I'm going to take my chance of you to make it, whatever. But how do you feel about, you know, that? You know, some people just won't. They won't pick it. Like, nope, I need to finish out the hole.
I think my biggest issue with that is people that don't go along with the etiquette of that, you know. And I understand people wanted finishing out their putts. I really do. You want to hole everything out. You want to have a score that you know is completely legit, you know. Sidebar, I worked at a club where the men's league used to have the greens chairman go out and put a piece of tape on the flag stick because they got into an argument where you use the term inside the leather.
Yep.
And everyone has different length putters. And this was when I was working there. This was when long putters were still, a real thing.
Oh, yeah.
So then the argument came about like, well, my inside the leather is only 31 inches and your inside the leather is 40 inches.
Yep.
So that's not really fair. So the men's game, the hat group that we had, the greens chairman would actually go out and put tape around the bottom of the flag stick so that it was no longer inside the leather. It was, if it's inside that tape, so it's consistent for everyone, it's good. But to your point, I think what bothers me the most, and I have one buddy that does this and it drives me insane. And I love the kid to death, but we'll be playing around and we might not even be playing for anything. Like we might just be out there having fun and he'll have like a 2.5 footer and there's a group on the tee behind us. And I'm like, dude, that's good. You know, take it away. Yep. Or I'll take the ball and I'll hit it back to him because I don't even want him to putt it.
Yep.
But what he ends up doing is he'll end up having a 2 footer and I'll be like, all right, bud, that's good. And I'll be getting ready to hit my putt. And he'll walk up and try to brush it in because he wants the ball to go in the hole.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's putting for 4, right? From, let's say he had a good hole. He's putting from four from 2 feet, from 2.5 feet. And I say that's good. That's a 4. I've already said that it's good. But then he'll go up and try to brush it in and miss it. And I'll be like, all right, well, you hit the putt. That's a 5, man. I gave you the option. You tried to hole it out. And I feel like part of the etiquette is – if someone says it's good, don't embarrass yourself. I mean, don't try to brush it in and try to 1 foot it and not stand in my line. If I say it's good, pick it up, put the ball in your pocket, walk off the green.
Yeah, let's go.
If you walk up there and try to hit the putt and we're playing for anything, you just missed the putt. You hit the putt.
Yeah.
I've already said it's good. You know what I mean? I have a couple buddies that do that and it, for pace of play, it drives me insane.
Yeah.
And if you want to brush it in and miss it, whatever. But if I say it's good and you're like, no, I want to finish out. And then you walk up there, you mark it, you know, you move the ball where the putting line is, you step back and you read it. It's like, dude, the whole purpose of me saying it's good is to kind of speed up what we're doing.
Yeah.
If I wanted you to mark it, read it and hit the putt, I wouldn't have said it was good.
100% agree. Yep.
And that's got to be one of my biggest pet peeves when it comes to stuff like that. It's like I've gone out in member games and where there's money on the line and I'll have like a 6-foot slider down the hill and they're, oh, Steve, that's good. Pick it up. What do you think I'm doing? I'm picking it up and I'm putting it in my pocket saying thank you.
Heck yeah. I had one of those last year. I can't remember who I was playing. Somebody was like, you want to go good, good? And I'm like, man, I'm a lot farther away than you are. But I was just like, yes, I do. Good, good. And I picked it up. And I think we were tied, you know, it was like going into the next hole. We both like played that hole like crap. So it was like, they were both like bogey putts or whatever. So it was like, all right, let's move it on. I was like, yeah, I didn't even question it. I just kind of looked over and was like, yep, let's go on.
Oh yeah. And I've had times where sometimes I've had members that will, if I'm playing in a game where I'll have like, you know, I just lagged like a 40-foot slider down the hill and I have a foot left and they don't say a word. And I'm like, okay, I guess I'm marking it.
Yeah.
And then I'll have other times where I have a 6-footer that I really don't think I would make, you know, 50% of the time. And, oh, that's good, Steve, pick it up. Okay. Either way, I'm not questioning it, you know, but it's just funny how that works. But if someone says it's good, pick it up, get out of the way.
Yeah, just move along. And some people sit there, like, oh, then I, you know, how do I know? Like, you know, somebody's score could really change if you made them put it out. And it's like, dude, I get that. But, man, like, again, I mean, I guess you got nothing else to do that, you know, you want to sit out here for 6 hours, but man, I got stuff I want to do. I got a life here, you know?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It's funny to see that happen, but that's part of the etiquette is, you know, if one of your playing partners says that it's been 5 minutes searching for a ball, now I guess now new rules, 3 minutes, it's been 3 minutes. You know, if one of your playing partners says that's good or says that it's OB or whatever, that's part of the etiquette is kind of getting along with your playing partners. And when you kind of go rogue like that, the only thing you can do is make yourself look like a, you know what, because you're going to go tap in that 2-footer. And if you miss it, you look stupid. Just pick the golf ball up, you know, don't try to straddle over my line and brush it in and miss it. Just pick the golf ball up. Yeah. But a different topic. I had someone who follows Mondays Off a little bit had made a comment to me about golf courses and conditioning. And I thought it was pretty interesting because this might not be something that everyone understands. He said that he had played a golf course in a tournament, and when he played in the tournament, it was phenomenal. And then when he went back and played it, I guess just as a, you know, person of the public, a greens fee player, that it was in terrible shape. And I guess I would let you answer that first before I explain, because being at a club, multiple clubs, I see the difference between our day-to-day play and what we would do for a member guest or what we would do for if we had, you know, a state amateur or a state open. And I feel like people might not understand that when you see a golf course like that in a tournament condition, that's not what it plays day to day.
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, I've played, I was lucky enough to locally play a club here in Metro Detroit that had the Michigan Am 1 year. This was years ago. And I got to play it that Monday morning after, you know, it finished up on Sunday, whatever. I got to play it Monday morning. And it was same pins, everything. I mean, the greens were still, and it was crazy. I mean, the greens were insanely fast. I mean, they were perfect. They rolled great, all that, but I mean, they were insanely fast. You know, everything, the rough was a little longer, but you know, like you said, everything was like in great shape, as you call it. I mean, there's nothing dead laying around. There was, you know, any of that, but the course played tough. I played this course by 10 times, and that was the one time that I always remember it, because I was like, man, the greens are fast. They rolled true. You know, the breaks were exaggerated. I mean, everything about it was just tough, but it was fun. Had a good time. And every other time I've played it, it's never been in what I would consider bad shape by any means, but it was never like that. And I could see where people would maybe take that as, well, it wasn't in as good of shape because it wasn't, you know, the tournament level. But, you know, I understand where somebody's coming from with that, but I don't necessarily think, one, that it may be necessarily a bad thing. And two, you know, course conditions do change either throughout the year, throughout the weeks, whatever. I mean, weather, play, whatever. I mean, they definitely take a toll on a course, and it definitely changes it.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. We had a superintendent, a guy by the name of Justin Murray, at one of the golf courses I worked at. And his line, which makes so much sense, is a golf course and tournament conditions is basically as close as you can come to losing a golf course without losing it. You know, you double cut and roll the greens. You know, if you do a member guest, that's like a month, Friday to Sunday kind of thing, or a Thursday to Saturday, whatever your club does, they're going to double cut and roll the greens once, possibly twice a day. And you're going to see the greens faster than they've ever been. The rough will be high. The fairways will be tight. You'll really see defined fairway cuts. You'll really see defined cuts around the green. You know, the tee boxes are as close to being pristine as possible. And I feel like people just don't understand that that's not an everyday occurrence. Because if you host an event like that, whether it's a member guest, a state am, stayed open, the superintendent is sweating that out the entire time. And you even see some of the majors, you know, you see it like a place like Shinnecock or what was the other one that really got browned out throughout the week? I don't remember offhand.
Oh, it was the one up in, was it Whistling Straits?
I don't think it was Whistling
Straits. It was, I know what you're talking about. The one that they were like showing guys were like bouncing golf balls off the fairway.
Yes. Yeah.
Where Spieth pulled it out and DJ kind of missed some shots near the end to lose.
That was Whistling.
Yeah. Wasn't it?
Yeah. It might've been where it was. But just the difference in, you know, that's definitely not what the golf course is all the time. And I think where I struggle with that is I know that because I've seen tour events and you watch tour events on TV and, you know, they'll say, yeah, the greens are pretty receptive right now, but wait until they bake out on Saturday or Sunday and they're going to be firm. They're going to be fast. They're going to be tough to hold. But I'll have members that go play, and sometimes it's not even like a huge event. Sometimes they'll go play like a one day member guest or something. And they'll come back and they'll say, oh, so-and-so country club, their greens are rolling a 13 and our greens are only running a 9 or a 10. And it's like, well, yeah, but you just went there to play a member guest. You know, what are our greens when we have a member guest?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's just one of those things where our super could get our greens up to a 13 whenever he wanted to, but it's not healthy for the grass. It's not good for the grass. That's tournament conditions, you know, and that's why anywhere there's a tour event, whoever goes and plays the week after it always says it's in terrible shape. There's divots everywhere. All the grass is browned out, you know, and they struggle with that, but that's the sacrifice you make to get the course in that condition. You know, day in and day out, I guarantee you the best country clubs in the world, you know, their greens probably roll. It's always over exaggerated, but their greens probably roll safely 10 and a half, 11, you know, maybe like your higher end top 100s. And I don't want to name any, and cause I don't know exactly. And, but you know, some of those higher end clubs, maybe their greens roll a 12 every day when the right season is in and the conditions are correct. But I guarantee you that's not what they do year round.
Yeah.
And some people go out and they play a golf course and it's like, oh, the greens were 13. And it's like, well, you just played in the state open. I it's not what their conditions are like year round.
Yeah.
You know, but they've only played that course once or twice. And their only time playing that golf course is in that condition. So they think that it can be nothing other than that. I mean, your average, and this is just my feeling on it. From what I've seen, I've played really nice courses where it's not a tournament and their greens aren't that fast.
Yep.
You know, probably your high end country clubs. I think 11 is a good number. Maybe 11 and a half, maybe 12 if you play it late in the afternoon. Even though the grass has grown a little bit, it's probably fried out a little bit. But 12 would really, really be pushing it. Most golf clubs you're going to see anywhere from 10 to 11. And then your local golf courses, you're probably somewhere between 9 and 10 in not tournament conditions.
Yep.
But that's a whole conversation for another time where the stint meter just gets thrown out the door and you know someone plays a golf course where they hit a 10-foot putt down the slope a little bit and they run it 10 feet past and they're like, oh, those greens must have been a 15.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, you're probably just not used to putting on greens that are running a 12.
Oh yeah, I agree. I mean, I've played at you know, I've been fortunate to play some courses with some fast greens, and it's so funny because, you know, I remember, well, actually, I'll do it this summer. I remember sitting there, and my dad plays this course that we play a lot in the summer. It's down near his, you know, my parents' cottage. And he was sitting there the whole week. I was like, yeah, I'm coming down on, you know, whatever day, coming down Friday. And he's like, oh, man, we're going to play. He's like, God, the greens are so fast. You're not going to believe it. I can't believe how fast the greens are. These things are insane. Oh, man. Then I get there, and the first putt on one, because when we show up, we're like first tee time out. Like, there's no, hang out at the putting green, all that.
So, like, close the trunk and go to the tee.
We're like, yeah, close the trunk. We're ready to go. And we roll up, and that first putt, I walk up, and I hit it halfway there. And I was like, man, these guys got me all shook, thinking these greens are going to be like, you know, like putting on a hardwood floor. And granted, they were quick, but, I mean, they weren't like, you know, like the way he was touting it was like, you know, it was Augusta on Sunday after, you know, a hot weekend. It wasn't anything like that, but, you know, to him that they were that fast. And I was just like, man, and it kind of screwed me up for half the day. I couldn't get putts to the hole because I was so nervous about like, well, is this the green that's fast? Or it's like, oh man, is this one fast?
Yeah. And I'm not saying anything about, you know, your family or anything like that, but it's not just that. Everyone likes to embellish, you know, everyone True. Wants to have the fastest greens. Everyone wants to tell you about, the ridge that's in the middle of 12 green that you can't stop it if you're on top of the ridge. And they might've only experienced that once or twice, you know, maybe one day in the Northeast, it would be probably either mid to late spring or, just before, you know, mid fall, somewhere in there. Like for us, prime time is like end of September, October, where because of the temperatures, they can really get the golf course in any condition they want. And it's not going to, we're not going to lose the course.
Yeah.
But you play it that time of year and you have one or two experiences where maybe you firm a putt a little bit and you hit it off the front of the green. And then you tell that story for the next 3 years. Oh yeah. Well, you know, if you get to 12 green and you're above the ridge, you're not stopping it. That's not an everyday occurrence. You know, and you'd be surprised if anyone out there who works at a golf course, if you look at it during a member guest or, like I said, a local amateur or even a state open, or if you're lucky enough to host like a mini tour or even a PGA Tour event, the week or 2 weeks following that event, maintenance is on damage control because of the condition that they had the golf course in. I worked at one place where they actually had to go out and sod 5 of the greens after the member guest, not the entire green, but some of the low points. And then some of the points on high ridges where it just got baked out and they had to switch the grass out because it was dead.
Yeah. That's brutal.
And that's what it takes to get the golf course in that condition. But it's just, I feel like people don't understand that. Like I said, members come back to me all the time. Oh, you know, XX Country Club is running at a 13. They had it on their chalkboard. Well, you played an event. If you go there as a guest sometime, let me know if they're still running a 13. There's no way. You know, it's just not possible to keep a golf course in that condition year round. But anyway, I wanted to ask you about this before we close up. What were your takeaways from the Genesis with Tiger?
You know, he was streaky, you know, I'll say that. I mean, there was some,
but he drove the, you know what, out of it though.
He did. I mean, driver, I mean, I guess, M5 is, he's found some love with that.
Is that what he's gaming?
I think so. He's got M5 okay. in the bag. Yeah, no, he drove the ball well. I mean, from, the amount I was watching him, I mean, really, it looked like he wasn't really hitting the irons that great. You know, he hit it closer to the hole as the week went on, but, you know, the first couple rounds, it was just like, he was hitting it onto the green, but it was nowhere near the hole. You know, and that makes it tough to drain a bunch of birdies unless you just, you know, have that one weekend where you just putt out of your mind. But, yeah. And then, I mean, he played pretty poorly and then he came back and the start of the third round went like birdie, eagle, birdie, birdie, par, par. So, I mean, he was like 5 under through, you know, 7 holes.
And then unfortunately the sun went down.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of those things. Like if he could have kept playing on that, man, he would have probably really got himself into contention. But, you know, yeah, for his first tournament out, I don't think he looked too bad. Knocking a little rust off, getting, you know, the competitive juices flowing. I think he's, you know, he had a pretty decent showing. I think he was a T15.
Correct. So,
T15. Yeah. Top 20 first, shot out of the gate. I think that's not a bad weekend for old Tiger.
No, great week. Yeah, I was surprised with how well he drove it because usually when you drive it that well, it kind of funnels down to through the rest of your game. You know, you get confidence off the tee, then you get confidence with the approach shots. And if your short game's working, you really have confidence to fire at, you know, any kind of flag stick you want, because you know you're hitting fairways, you know you're going to make some birdies, and you know you can get up and down. I was just surprised. I think the stat was 6-3 putts.
Yeah, that's
and tough. I have no idea what's going on with that, because he would go years, stretches, where he wouldn't have a 3-putt. You know, he would go play an entire year and maybe have 1 3-putt. And to have 6 in one event, and it's always comical, his Sunday round press conference where he's like, well, you know, I was 6 off the lead, whatever, or 8 off the lead, and I had 6 3-putts. And, you know, if I don't 3-putt, then I'm there, and maybe I roll in a couple more, and now I'm in contention. Like, he always finds a way to spin it where he could have found himself into contention. But it was certainly a first good showing. And when they're playing the WGC Mexico.
Yeah, this week.
And it's that real short course, right? Where I don't even think DJ hit any drivers when he won there. I think he just hit a bunch of like 3 and 4 irons, 5 irons off the tee. So that should be interesting to see, because that could, even though he's driving the golf ball well, that could bode pretty well for him if he can just find a track where he can just go around and hit stingers all day.
Yeah. I mean, that or if he is driving it well, that he can just, you know, knock driver wedge on every hole and, you know, hopefully just knock it close and just, you know, drain a bunch of easy birdies.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's he'll, until we get to the Masters, he'll just keep saying that he's gearing up for April. So it's, but it was a good showing. I mean, he went from almost not making the cut to sneaking his way within, I think at one point he got to like 5 off the lead at one point.
Yeah. I think it was right around that. Yeah. 5 or 6. He was close.
Yeah. Which, you know, you make a couple more birdies, you're right there. So that was fun to watch. And at the end of the day, all kidding aside, I am, to kind of summarize everything, I am very happy for JB Holmes. You know, anytime you see the wife and the kid run out on the green, and that's kind of sentimental for me. And, you know, the brain surgery that he had and all that, he can play as slow as he wants. It's pretty neat that he's still able to come back and win after all that. So good for him. I feel bad for JT, though. He's got to close out some tournaments, man.
That is true, man. I mean, I'm the same. I agree with you about JB, too. I mean, this is his fifth win on tour. And like you said, the hurdles he's climbed over is, you know, there's probably a lot of guys who wouldn't have been able to come back from a lot of that stuff. So, you know, it is good to see him win, but I'm with you. I mean, I'm a JT fan, and it was tough watch. I mean, Adam Scott and Henrik Stenson are my two favorite players. They've been that way since like early 2000s. It was tough watching JT and Adam Scott just struggle, you know, because they were all in the same group.
And it was windy, but it seemed like there were a ton of gettable holes out there. I've never played Riviera. I'm sure if I did, I'd shoot 95. So I can't criticize them too much. But I saw how much the wind was blowing. But it just surprised me that I feel like even the tournaments that Justin Thomas has won, he's kind of come back, with the exception of the PGA, I feel like he's kind of come back to the field a little bit. And I don't know what his issue is with closing out. I think he won, and we talked about this before the podcast, and someone out there, please fact check me on this. I wanted to say he won the Wells Fargo, but I don't think that's it. But coming down the stretch, he had like a 2 or 3 shot lead, and he like dumped one in the fairway bunker and then left it short, ended up in a greenside bunker. He ended up squeaking out a win, I think, by like 1 shot. But it's like we got to learn to close out tournaments a little bit.
Yeah, he definitely does. And I don't think it's a thing of like, I don't think it's so much choking. I mean, we'll call it, I guess everybody's going to call it a choke, but I think the guy's just so competitive and he gets so amped up and he wants to win so bad that he can't like calm it down. Like that's my feeling. Like the nerves are too high. He's just too excited. He's ready to go. He's just like out there. And I think that stuff just gets him tense. He gets kind of quick with some of the putts. And I think he just gets frustrated, you know, when things start really going his way. And I think that's what causes him to kind of fall off a little bit on some of those Sundays and even Saturdays. But yeah, he does got to learn to, you know, either tone it down or whatever, calm himself, and he'll be able to put away a bunch more victories.
Yeah, and I mean, if anyone makes coming in second look good, it's him. I mean, his outfits all week with the RLX vest were on point. So
yeah, that one shirt that was had like that pattern on it. It was like black and white. Was
oh, I love that. I'm glad I'm not the only one that thought that. He had that black with like the white polka dot.
Yep.
Polo on, and he wears it well, but hopefully more to come. He just needs to close out some events. So I guess next week we'll be talking about the WGC Mexico, and hopefully that's good. Hopefully Tiger has a good showing, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, it's a good field, so we'll hopefully have some stuff to talk about there. And yeah, if you have anything else that you want to, you know, DM at Mondays Off on Instagram.
Mondays Off WRX. Work on that pace of play for me, Newton.
Huh? Hey, my pace of play is fast, man. I play. I move. I got my push cart out there when I'm walking, and I'm just like cruising, man. Walk up, hit it, keep going, hit it again.
Hit it, find it, hit it again. That's it.
Damn right.
So as per usual, Newton. I almost said Nutson. Newton. Thank you for the time, man, and we'll catch up next week.
Yep, sounds good.
All right, talk to you soon.